UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
According to new findings from a multi-site study, a new approach to treating emphysema has demonstrated significant positive results. Here to tell us about that is Dr. Mark Dransfield. He's a professor and the medical director of UAB Lung Health Center. Dr. Dransfield, before we discuss the procedure, tell us about the current state of emphysema today. What are you seeing?
So, unfortunately, COPD and emphysema continues to be a major killer in the United States. It's currently the fourth leading cause of death. And in the state of Alabama, we think about 1 in 10 adults have the disease. And so even though smoking rates have declined over time, it continues to be a major public health problem.
Tell us the idea behind lung volume reduction procedures. What are they intended to do and when would you use them?
Sure. Well, for people with advanced emphysema, there's a limit to how effective inhaled medications are for the disease, which is the mainstay of treatment. And since the 1950s, we've known that lung volume reduction surgery was a potential therapeutic alternative. And what the surgical procedure does is to take out areas of the lung that are destroyed by emphysema, and that improves the overall breathing mechanics, including returning the diaphragm to its normal operating position and relieving compression on the more normal parts of the lung. There aren't a lot of lung volume reduction surgeries performed in the United States, primarily because of patient and provider concerns about complications, although the data would suggest that the long-term advantages to lung volume reduction surgery far outweigh the risks. With a mortality advantage in selected patients. But for a long time, we've been interested in developing less invasive ways to achieve the same goal, and that's what has led to the development of endobronchial valve.
Then tell us about the Zephyr valve procedure and how it's demonstrated the ability to reduce lung volume that can lead to substantial improvements in lung function, symptoms, quality of life. Tell us how it works.
Sure. Well, endobronchial valves, or the Zephyr valve, is a one-way valve that is placed bronchoscopically, meaning without surgery, usually into one lobe of the lung that's most affected by emphysema. We only treat one side, so it's a unilateral procedure. And those valves allow air to escape from that hyperinflated lobe, and then the lobe can't refill. So over a period of hours to days, the targeted lobe falls in on itself or collapses and reduces the overall volume of the lung in that hemithorax. There isn't a resection, obviously. We're not doing a surgical procedure, but the idea is to achieve the same goal, to reduce the overall volume of the targeted lung. And that leads to the same physiologic benefits that the surgical procedure offers.
What are some of the challenges? As you said, it isn't being done very many places, and people were concerned about the complications. What are some of the challenges? Is there a learning curve with this valve placement? Is lung motion an issue? Tell us about some of the challenges.
Sure. Well, I think when I was referring to the concerns about complications, that was mostly related to the surgical procedure. Which is what the valves are intended to potentially take the place of. So it was the concerns about complications of taking sick people with lung disease to the operating room to have a big surgery that's driven many people away from the surgical procedure. The advantage to the valves, of course, is that although we do put them in under general anesthesia, there's no incision, there's no thoracotomy, and so right off the bat, you have a procedure with a much lower probability of complications. in terms of the valves themselves, there certainly is a learning curve to putting them in. There's important issues about selecting the appropriate patients based on their degree of lung function impairment, their degree of hyperinflation, and the pattern of emphysema, because not all patients with severe emphysema will respond to the valve treatment. But through the conduct of the clinical trials that led to its approval last year, we do understand quite a bit about who are the appropriate candidates and feel comfortable selecting those now.
Then tell us who those are and who should not be treated this way.
Sure. I think we ideally treat people whose shortness of breath and poor quality of life is being driven by their lung disease. So we don't think people with major other medical comorbidities are good candidates. For example, people with very severe heart failure who have shortness of breath driven by their cardiac dysfunction are much less likely to respond to the valve treatment. It doesn't mean that people can have no other medical problems. They certainly can and often do, but we want the primary driver of their symptoms to be related to their lung. The second key issue is that not all patients with severe COPD or severe emphysema have hyperinflation, and hyperinflation is the overfilling of the lung that leads to the mechanical disadvantage of breathing that occurs. And so there can be patients, or there are many patients with severe lung disease and severe emphysema also, who really don't have significant hyperinflation. And if they don't have hyperinflation, they're not going to respond to the valve treatment either. The tests to determine that are straightforward breathing tests that we can do in the clinic. I think those are the two main things that determine treatment response, along with the pattern of emphysema in the lung.
Dr. Dransfield, do you have some predictors of treatment response? And based on clinical trials, and as you said, the learning curve, do you have a comparison over a course of a year compared to patients taking only medication or patients with the valve?
Sure. Well, through the clinical trials, the main one that we were involved with was a study called Liberate that was published last year. There have been four or five other trials conducted to support the technology, but depending on the outcome that you look at, whether it's lung function, quality of life, or exercise capacity, the improvement with valves compared to people that were just treated with medications alone varies, but it's on the order of 15 to 25%, which is far greater than what you would expect with the addition, for example, of another inhaled treatment. So we think these benefits are not only were statistically significant in the studies, but also are clinically meaningful for patients.
Tell us about some promising new therapies. Looking forward to the next 10 years in the field of emphysema, COPD, advanced emphysema, what do you see happening, Dr. Dransfield?
Well, there have been a lot of advancements in the last 15 to 20 years in terms of the inhaled medications that are available, and those continue to become more powerful, easier to take, and I suspect there'll be additional combination agents that come out over time. Having said that, for people with very severe emphysema, there's a limitation, as I mentioned at the beginning, as to how well they respond to those treatments, no matter how many of them you give them. And so bronchoscopic approaches like the endobronchial valves offer promise for that patient group. There are a series of other bronchoscopic lung volume technologies that are in development. Some of them are already available in Europe, and others are on the horizon in the United States. Without getting into all the details of the valves themselves, there are patients who are hyperinflated, but based on their pattern of emphysema, are not good candidates for the valve treatments, but may be candidates for other lung volume reduction strategies. So we continue to be involved in clinical trials evaluating those here at UAB.
As we wrap up, tell other physicians what you'd like them to know about the Zephyr valve and advanced emphysema, and when you feel it's important that they refer to the specialists at UAB Medicine.
I think that for patients who meet the criteria we've already discussed, those that don't have major other medical problems, they have severe emphysema and have persistent severe symptoms and impaired quality of life, and hyperinflation, we're happy to evaluate those for the procedure. I think that We think overall the benefits are comparable to what we see with surgical lung volume reduction, but the risk of complications is far lower. And so I think if providers have people they think are appropriate candidates, we'd be happy to look at them for not only the valves, but other advanced treatments, including the surgical procedure itself, or even lung transplant.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dransfield, for coming on with us today and sharing your expertise. Thank you again. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.